Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
All right, John, what do you think about Paxton Lynch coming to Seattle?
Why not? I mean, he's a big quarterback. I mean, see if he can, it doesn't cost much. I'm sure he's making the NFL minimum. I mean, he's got first-round talent, but never really materialized and, has a long way to go. But why not take a chance?
How about Hundley? They've traded a sixth round for him. Mm-hmm. What do you think's going to happen with him?
Hard to tell. I don't know what kind of market. He's not going to have much of a market. It's probably, a minimum salary. So it wouldn't surprise me if they bring him back. But clearly, with Alex Magoo going to Jacksonville, they needed to get a quarterback to sign. And, of course, he was available. And he's got, raw talent. He just never was able to put it back. But, I wouldn't be surprised if Hundley comes back. Again, it probably would have to be more of a minimum deal. And I think that he probably likes the situation. And I don't know what his market is. So I wouldn't be opposed to think that that's not going to happen.
Hey, John, who's a free agent that's out there on another team that looks like the Seahawks might want to pursue him?
Hard to tell right now. I think right now they got to focus on what they have and what they want to do with their own players before they start to really look and see. Now, I don't know if there's going to be urgency now on the weak side linebacker position, but what their needs are. They need a pass rusher, but I think they need to get that more out of the draft than anything else. And the big thing that they don't want to do is, they got to figure out how many guys are going to lose, because the compensatory pick I think has to be in the mix for this year, because again, they've got to start adding draft choices, and they can use the compensatory picks in 2020. They'll get the list or the possibilities. If they can find out if they can, have the trades and all that stuff. So I think in the end, if they can at least get about, because again, you figure it's going to be a third rounder for Earl Thomas, maybe a fourth rounder for KJ Wright, maybe a sixth or something like that for Michael Davis, and then we'll see if they're able to keep the guards. But each free agent that they sign off the unrestricted list is going to take away a draft choice. It took away all the draft choices they could have got last year.
Is it a big year for pass rushers in the draft?
Yes, it's one of the best. I mean, you look at up and down the first round. I mean, it's a defensive draft where probably 65 to 70% of the guys taken in the first round are going to be in defense, and so many of them are on defensive ends. It's a real good year for pass rushers.
John, I read in Bob Condotta's story today, Jim was pointing this out, that there's some talk in NFL circles that Michael Kendricks might not be facing any jail time. Have you heard any scuttlebutt about what might happen with him? I know all of us are out of our element.
Yeah, we're all guessing. I mean, it's like we can all be asked the questions, but we're all not legal experts. I mean, we cover football, we cover sports, but we're not lawyers. And again, you would have to be a judge. And so anybody speculating on that is just guessing at this stage. I think that it's within reason to start to think that maybe, just maybe, he won't have to serve any jail time, because he's been cooperative, all those different things. But it's a big setback to have that moved all the way back to April. That hurts, because again, it hurts him financially, because now he doesn't get the chance to get money in free agency. And I think that teams will make their decisions by April of what they're going to do at certain positions. And so now he pretty much has to take backup money to come here, if not like the NFL minimum. But to speculate and think what's going to happen in the case, we don't know.
What do you think of Darrell Bevell's landing spot?
I like it. I think it, because he gets to go, and the big thing,
a good quarterback, right? With Matt.
Yeah, he gets
Stafford.
A very good quarterback in Matt Stafford. I mean, he's got a good running back in Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, a rookie.
A decent offensive line. You got two receivers. Galladay is not too bad at the one spot. He's the young receiver. And then you certainly like Marvin Jones. They need to add another one. But no, I think he's in a good situation, because you know what the mandate's going to be. Run the football. And even though in the last couple of years he didn't run the football that much because of the bad offensive line and the inability to really get a good running game going, I mean, he still has that history of running over 500 times when Marshawn Lynch was here. And I think that's probably what was the final sell to Matt Patricia to hire Darrell Bevell. Sure, I know he's a West Coast offense guy, and normally West Coast offense guys like tend to want to pass the ball more. But you notice back in the days of Marshawn and the great years for the Seahawks, you know, they ran the ball and they ran it a lot. And I think that's what it's going to be doing, because that's what made the change from Jim Bob Cooter being let go, because Jim Bob Cooter didn't run the ball enough.
John, how cold was it in that coldest? Was that a NFC Championship game between Green Bay and Dallas back in the day with Bart Starr? Or was that a NFL Championship game?
Was that the coldest? I mean, I think it was like -3, -4 wind chill.
I think it was below zero temperature.
Was it below zero temperature? Yeah, it was cold.
I'm just looking at a picture of Bart Starr taking a snap, and you can see his cleats on the ground, and his cleats are not penetrating anything.
Yeah,
like he's up almost on skates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Game. And you remember how weird it was in Green Bay, particularly for that game with Matt Hasselbeck, and it was kind of a frozen tundra there. And there's different parts. If all of a sudden the heating element in Lambeau didn't work, remember that one spot where I think what wide receiver ended up breaking his leg? Was it?
From the Seahawks?
Yeah, from the Seahawks. I mean, hit that one spot on the return, and then got a fracture. And again, it's like it can be real dangerous in those areas, even if you have the heating elements.
Yeah, and they do have that in Kansas City, right? Before game, they were showing it. It said it won't let it go below freezing or something like that.
Right.
So what's going on as far as weather?
Well, now it's not as bad, because apparently the forecast has kind of lightened up a little bit. The Arctic blast has apparently blew through, and so now they're talking about it being in the 20s.
So it was over-exaggerated, just like via doom?
Talking about it being over-exaggerated, because then the doom will come. Yeah. Everybody will go back.
I have not experienced any ill effects from via doom.
Oh!
Do you know about this, John?
Now you done it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they closed the viaduct, and there was all this panic. And I had three different people go, "You haven't even heard about this?" I'm like, "Well, no, because I'm coming from the east side." "Oh, that's going to affect you." Well, I've had nice, smooth sailing into work
so far
all week.
Dave, I would, if I'm you, I wouldn't walk out the building.
I know.
You may have people ready to beat you up.
Yeah.
I mean, here you have one of the worst traffic situations and one of the biggest headaches for everybody downtown that comes from certain areas, and you're, I don't have any problems.
Here's the thing.
What a bunch of babies. A bunch of whiners.
Dave's right. It hasn't been as bad as everybody predicted. I just feel like the other shoe's going to drop. I got some answers about the coldest game. Coldest game was the Ice Bowl. Okay. That was Cowboys. It was -15 degrees at kickoff with wind chill going up to 37. Second coldest game is the Dan Fouts at Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. That was January 10th, 1982. And that was -9 degrees at kickoff, but it was -59 with the wind chill. And the rumor was, or people had said, that they opened the doors to the concourses to let the wind blow through.
For those San Diego boys.
Yeah, to make it even colder.
And I still remember, being on the West Coast, covering for the Pittsburgh Press at that time, and sitting down at the Mission Valley Marriott in the pool, which was it wasn't the Mission Valley Marriott. It was the Hyatt Islandia. I was over at the Hyatt Islandia, and there was a bunch of us writers sitting in the hot tub in the pool, and it was 70 degrees, and we didn't seem to be bothered by the cold weather in Cincy.
That's kind of like me talking about Viadoom there, John.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I'm not really going to have anybody beating me up like they're going to be beating you up.
You're sticking it to them, John.
Was that? You're the one sticking it to them.
Where's the Seattle-Minnesota game rank? Because that was cold. That was when, what's his face? We can't mention his name. Missed the field goal the Vikings.
Blair Walsh.
All right, you did it. Now, and I remember going to the Carolina game the next week, and we stopped in Minnesota and changed plans.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh, it was cold there. Does that one rank in any of the...
Got to be in the top 7 or 8.
Fourth coldest, according to the Google here. There's a Giants-Packers game in 2008. I believe that's where Tom Coughlin's cheeks turned that...
And I still remember, because I did the segment right before Countdown, and this was probably... That would be 7:56 West Coast time. And so I'm standing there. No, it was 8:56 West Coast time. And so I'm standing there, and you can actually see my face getting frostbite, because you can see all the red stuff going up my cheeks, heading up to my face. And then, of course, my mouth was puckering, you know, and I didn't even wear a coat. A regular heavy coat. I just had the regular sport coat on. And so I was absolutely freezing. My hand was stuck to the microphone because the ice was holding it there. And then Bob Lee had the wonderful words say, "Oh, and John, we got some extra time to ask a couple extra questions." I go, "Oh, yeah."
You're going to die of exposure out there.
Yeah.
Minus tough. -6, wind chill of minus 25 in that playoff game.
And I still remember, and this is one for Jim Moore, because, this would have been a tough game for Jim to go to, because let's say that he would go to the concession stand and get two beers, which many people do in Green Bay. So they go and you put, and this is what was told to me. I was in the press box after trying to warm up, and what was told to me was that, you know, if you took the sip out of your first beer, by the time you had your own beer on the second beer, it was frozen on the ground.
Ooh. Well, you just chug it.
Yeah, well, you can chug the first one, but the second one's going to be frozen.
Well, you chug them back to back then.
Just make a popsicle out of it.
Beer popsicle.
All right, since we're talking about weather, Professor, I think you know that I listened to RJ Bell, the Dream Podcast. Have you incorporated that into your database yet?
I have not, no.
Okay, that's where he gets his smoking locks from.
Yeah,
John,
I get gambling information, but these guys also pass along football information. I find it interesting, and I think you will too, John. You ready for this fun fact from the Dream Podcast? And I think you like Kansas City in this game.
I do indeed.
Okay, now this might make you change your mind.
It won't.
It might.
It won't.
It might. Patrick Mahomes, he's played 18, let's see, how many games has he played? So last year and this year, right?
In 1 year, he's played 19 games.
19 games. Okay. Did you know that his worst four quarterback ratings were in the coldest games that he's played in, including last week? And we know it's going to be in the 20s. It'll be another cold day there in Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
Professor.
Right.
Does that make you change your mind and
no.
lean toward New England? Thinking about Tom Brady, all the cold weather success he's had over his career.
How many points did he score?
I don't know.
Was it 31? Was it 31-13, the final?
What, against the Colts?
Against the Colts.
He did, but is
okay, now think about this. You say the four coldest games, he had a lower rating and all this different stuff. Mm-hmm. There's not been a game this year, I'm talking from the beginning of the season to the playoffs, he scored less than 26 points.
Okay.
Does that change my mind? No. And the last two times that Tom Brady has been on the road in a playoff game, he scored 16 and 18 points. And if you look at their scoring, I think they're averaging like 21 points a game on the road.
All right.
The Patriots.
Okay.
Kansas City did run for four touchdowns in that game. But he was 27 for 41, 278 mm-hmm. yards, which is Tom Brady's postseason average. And he didn't throw for any touchdowns.
I got one more for you to check out, John. I know how you like big hands on quarterbacks. Apparently, Patrick Mahomes has big hands, John.
Okay,
which helps
good.
In cold weather.
As does Tom Brady.
He has big mitts as well.
Well, no, he doesn't use the mitts. He's not a guy that's going to wear the gloves. I know Patrick's going to probably wear the gloves, but big hands. But look what it's done for Russell Wilson. Those 10.25-inch hands.
He does have big mitts, Danny.
Yeah. From the 425, Dave mocking Viadum is the traffic equivalent of the Bears kicker chuckling on the Today Show.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Shame
like it.
On you,
no,
Dave.
John, the kicker did not chuckle.
Now, that's a great text, because what it does, it puts him in with kickers.
Yeah.
I love this. This is great. This is why you're going to get beat up, Dave.
Clayton, you're going to go on my poop list here pretty quick. That's the meanest thing you've ever said to me.
What's that?
Compare me to a kicker.
Oh, I didn't compare you to a kicker. The texter did.
The 425.
Yeah, but you agreed and you laughed.
From the 206. Screw you, Wyman. I've been sitting on the West Seattle Bridge for 40 minutes. John, I saw Doug Marrone in Jacksonville. They've hired DeFilippo.
Yeah, John DeFilippo, yeah.
Now, he was the guy that was fired in Minnesota for not running the ball enough, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So that's a bad sign for Leonard Fournette, who's going to be looking to get his career back on track this year. But is it a positive sign that they're going to end up with Nick Foles.
I think so.
Because yeah.
Now, again, they even had to come out and say, we didn't hire DeFilippo just because of Nick Foles. But the fact that they even said it tells me that Nick Foles is on their list. Because when you think about the whole landscape of quarterbacks, I mean, if Denver's not signing a veteran quarterback, Tampa Bay's not signing a veteran quarterback, if the Giants stay with Eli Manning, if John Gruden stays with Derek Carr, I mean, he's there for the keeping. Now, again, Philly has to decide how they want to handle it. You know, do they want to go ahead and wipe out his contract, or do they want to try to, you know, put him in a position where he has to pay $2 million? I mean, he's $20.4 million. But I'll tell you, there's an interesting thought that is going around, and I have to, you know, really think through this. You know, they don't have to – I mean, they're paying, what, $7.5 million or $7.7 million right now for Carson Wentz. Is it worthwhile to pay one more year at $20.4 million for Foles just for the luxury of being able to have him in case Carson Wentz gets hurt? I don't think it'll happen, but again, it's a thought.
Yeah, it's interesting. If I was Philadelphia, man, I would keep Foles and trade Wentz because I think you'd get more.
Oh, that's wrong.
Really?
No.
I don't know, man.
Wentz is a better quarterback.
Yeah, but Foles, they win under Foles.
They win under Wentz, too.
Yeah, but they haven't.
They were on pace to a 13-3 season under Wentz. Last year.
Yeah, but you get so much more for Wentz in a trade, and you know you've got a guy that won a Super Bowl.
And you get
Bowl
a lesser quarterback in Foles.
Yeah.
Okay. You want the better quarterback, and he's the better quarterback. I mean, you know, he's got Pro Bowl and star written all over him. And, you know, you can look at the fact, okay, he had the misfortune of being hurt the first 2 years and not finishing the season. I remember this quarterback that they had with the New York Giants, a real talented guy drafted in the first round. His name was Phil Sims. Had some, kind of a similar career. Well, guess what? He bounced back from the early injuries and took the team to two Super Bowls.
Yeah, that's true. I would say this, though, and this would be my rationale for trading Wentz, is that they know they can win a Super Bowl with Foles, which is the goal, and you give your team more ammunition to put around Foles by trading Carson Wentz.
But, of course, remember, I mean, they won because, you know, Carson Wentz won enough games before he got hurt to put them in a position to have home field advantage, right?
That's true.
Okay, and, of course, you know, as we find out right now, and you go back the last 5 years, has there been a road team that's won a championship game? The last 10 teams that played in conference championship teams, you know, it's the home team that's won. The visiting team has not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want the quarterback that can get you to 13, not the quarterback that can get you to 11 or to 10.
I will say this. I can totally see that logic, John. I would say that Foles helped them rally to get into the playoffs this year, mm-hmm, that they weren't worse once he got in there. I'd trade Wentz, but
no, hey. but again, did they win?
Yeah.
No, they didn't. Because, you know, you want
that's
that
because
quarter-
one dude dropped a pass.
Yeah, that's true. But
I think if Alshon Jeffries catches that, I think they're going to win.
I see John's point, though. The better between the two quarterbacks, it's why you get more for Wentz in a trade, is that Wentz is considered better.
You'd be probably crucified there in Philadelphia
and
for trading
Wentz. No, let's put it this way. You'd be praised in Philadelphia if you trade Carson Wentz. I mean, they're all in the Nick Foles category.
Oh, really?
Let's put it this way. They all agree with you.
What, they're a bunch of Sea Rogers?
A bunch of savages.
What is C-Rodge?
C-Rodge loves him some Nick Foles.
Absolutely.
He's an Arizona Wildcat.
Yeah, we went to college together, John.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he would be there.
C-Rodge taught him everything he knows.
Absolutely.
Somebody saw a picture of C-Rodge. Why is that guy wearing an Eagles jersey?
It's a Nick Foles jersey.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Got it.
Hey, that means it's going to change. So you're going to get a Jaguars Foles jersey?
I don't think so. I've had this one for a long time. It saw its value decrease a lot.
Do we have to take a collection to get it for you?
I'm sure if people want to spring for it, I'll gladly wear it.
Oh, those Jags jerseys are kind of sweet.
Yeah, get a black one or a teal one.
Yeah.
I've always thought the Eagles fans, more than any other fan base, have the most outdated jerseys, though. Like, you still see people wearing Mike Quick jerseys out at the vet because they don't get new jerseys out there.
Yeah.
Well, you know why they don't get new jerseys?
Why?
Because they have to go across the bridge for New Jersey.
Oh, that's true.
Boom.
Good one.
John Clayton, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be here always. Free drinks. Hey, John, what about Eric Berry? They're saying he's like a day-to-day guy. And how much does he mean to that team?
He means everything. I mean... in a different way, I mean, because he's a great communicator and a great leader during the week. And so he offers the same thing that Earl Thomas offered here, you know, a top caliber safety. Now, again,
he'll flip off the sidelines?
No. Not on the positive side.
You meant before.
Yeah,
that.
But it's like, but you notice I put a little clause in there or a little pause when I basically said that during the week, because Earl, say what you want about him, he's not a during the week guy. I mean, he's concentrating on his own stuff. I mean, he's not. Real demonstrative in the locker room during the week. Where he expresses himself and does such a great job is in the games, where he's communicating, he's doing everything else. Mm-hmm. But during the week, I mean, he doesn't offer a lot to helping, whenever it's necessary. He just studies and gets ready. Eric is one that's going to help everybody during the week, and he's going to be a good leader on the field. I mean, you go back to his first game and when he played this year, the first half they did well. And he rested him in the second half because he was kind of under a pitch count. And so when he came off the field, the defense looked completely lost in a secondary.
Yeah, and he has got to be a tremendous inspiration to that team, because having overcome form of cancer, and it's pretty amazing what he's done.
Hey, John, Dave was mentioning Alshon Jeffery, and we saw the ball go through his hands on Sunday. There was not necessarily a happy ending, but a feel-good story today. Did you see this? He went and visited a second-grade class back there in Philadelphia, and some of the kids wrote him letters telling him to keep his chin up. One little girl said, "It's okay to lose. You don't always have to win a game. We couldn't have won the Super Bowl without you last year." So it was nice to see Alshon Jeffery going to that elementary school.
Yeah, it really was, and I guess it shows you the class act that you can be, because, I mean, the one thing he did not do, he did not go into Today Show.
Yeah, and
he did not
go
along with Rhoda. He didn't get on there and laugh about having that ball go through his hands like Cody Doink, the kicker.
Right.
And so I give him a lot of credit, because I think he handled it the right way. He could have been sitting back depressed or anything else, but I think the fact that he did that shows you a lot of class that's there in Alshon Jeffery, as opposed to Cody Doink, the kicker of the Mr. Parquet, who ends up going on the Today Show and laughing about his missed kick.
Let me say this.
Like that John just called her Rhoda.
Rhoda?
Well, I
what's
called
her name?
Hoda.
It's Hoda.
Oh, Paul, Hoda.
It's Hoda, Coda, Dota. Who knows?
I should know better. Pat watches that all the time.
Just to correct you, though, Professor, the kicker did not laugh. I just want to make that point clear.
He was
the kicker did
it up.
Not
they
laugh.
Did you hear the kind of laugh track? Was there a laugh track?
It was the women that were laughing. He didn't laugh.
Playing to the crowd. I'll say this. I kind of miss old Philly. I think Philly's gone soft. There was a time when that city could be counted on to boo Santa Claus. And here they are. It's okay. You don't have to always win. Says who? You should always win.
Danny, it's a second grade class that was saying
we're
going to
accuse them. That we're going to excuse
you think
that?
Those kids should be like Philly fans?
Yes!
Like,
yeah, get out of here, you bum.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Try.
See, and that's the thing, is that they can't boo Santa because they believe in Santa. Santa delivers them presents every year.
Yeah, they believed in Alshon Jeffery too, and he broke their little hearts.
You're mean, Danny.
A little bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring up the viaduct again.
Get other
any
people
other
get
hate mail for me here from the viadoom?
Any comparisons to kickers?
No comparisons to kickers. I saw Carson Palmer said that Bruce Arians the best thing that could have happened to Jameis Winston. I agree. I think of all the different coaching hires, that one to me makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm. And I would have to think if you're Jameis Winston, I mean, the first thing that you got to do, and of course he said nothing but good things about Bruce Arians, is go into a good superstore or go into a grocery store and go get him some real good seafood.
Crab legs.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to pay for it. I mean, just go in there and take it and just bring it back and give them to Bruce.
How about Byron Leftwich going in there? How much will that help him?
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, because one of the, this is where the league should go to Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and get some advice, because one of the problems I think you can see with the hiring of coaches, I mean, if you're going to make, if 30%, I mean, 75% of your coaches are going to be offensive hires, don't you think that you have to have quality minorities in the position to be able to be position coaches on offense and also to be play callers on offense? And that's where I give Bruce Arians. Think about what Bruce Arians has done. He loves calling plays. He's good at calling plays. Yet he's going to let Byron Leftwich, a rapidly improving offensive play caller, call the plays and set himself up in a position to get a head coaching job. You go, Bruce. Good move.
John, last thing for you. We were doing hockey terminology with Snoop Doggy Dog, and one of the terms that we were asked to define was the five hole. Can you tell us what the five hole is?
I could be. I'm probably wrong in that because I'm not current on that. My guess is the five hole going to be the left wing?
left wing. Let's see. Snoop, is the five hole the left wing?
The five hole is the space between the goalie's leg. Going five hole sounds dirty, but it just means scoring in the most humiliating way possible. In between the legs.
You gotta like that.
It's fantastic. John, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
If you missed any of the cold hard facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, well, download the podcast, 710sports.com. We'll have more hockey terminology and also a thought about how far the Huskies have come when it comes to hoops. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, batch number 12 vodka. I want to paint the picture for what Washington hoops look like when I stepped foot on campus in 1993. It was Bob Bender's first year as head coach. They were just coming out of the Lynn Nance era, who was a former FBI investigator, who the most significant thing I knew about Lynn Nance, well, two things. One, he had been a longtime assistant at the University of Kentucky. The second, that he was once asked by a reporter if he had ever shot a man.
Craig Smith.
Having been a former FBI agent, which certainly is an interesting question to be asked after a game. Washington hoops was a non-entity. They used to throw hamburgers into the crowd to try and get students there. They would also bring out pizza pies from Pizza Time for the loudest section to try and get people there. No admission was charged for students. And I remember finding that out, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you get to get in for free, and I'm going to come down here. And I remember having seen the Sports Illustrated preview issue, and a guy named Devondra Jones was playing for USC. I was like, heck, yeah, I'm going to go watch. And they were awful. They were so bad that year. They were absolutely horrible. By the way, Evandra Jones, now better known for what happened after he left USC, transferred to Fresno State and was part of a two-man robbery in which they stole something from someone by threatening him with samurai swords, which is the only time that little fact has ever been offered. Yes, that's correct. He and a man named Kenny Bruner had used samurai swords in a theft, which, if nothing else, you get creativity for trying that.
Well, it's not as bad as Marcus Cotton and Andre Bruce holding up a pizza man with a BB gun.
Well, that reflects more poorly upon the guy who surrendered anything to someone holding them hostage with a BB gun.
You think it was like the Red Rider?
I would hope he thought it was an BB actual gun. Yeah, what it was. It's like, no, don't shoot me with the BB that would be there. Washington Hoops was as dormant as possible. There were two memorable things that happened in that first season of Bob Bender, 1993-94. The first was that a man named Sam Allen, who was a transfer from American River Junior College, got his lip caught in the net after dunking. The only time I've ever seen that happen. Yeah, he dunked the ball, and as the ball like swished through the net came back, and it got caught on his upper lip, and we rewound it and watched it about 25 times, and it was nasty. It looked like his lip went like.
Did he hang there for a while?
No, it just came down, but he had to go get stitches.
He hung by his lip.
That was there.
That's a strong lip.
Oh, it looked awful. I think he had to get stitches. It was nasty.
How'd he get caught in the net?
Well, I think it was just the physics of the net was rattling around. He was pretty high up. He'd thrown it down with some authority. And then his mouth got caught against the net. The second thing was they upset Arizona, which I believe was one of like three victories that year. I bring that up because it's really cool what's happened at the University of Washington basketball program since then. It's cool what's happening tonight. They're hosting Stanford. The game's at 6:00. If the Huskies win, they'll be 4-0 in the conference for the first time in 35 years. 35, that's a long time. They've had good teams in that time. And the conference is down and all. The first time since Detlef Schrempf was there. You still had Marvelous Marv Harshman coaching the team back then. Christian Velp that was on the team. First time in 35 years they got a chance to do that. Lorenzo Romar and what he brought the program back to, and the course Hopkins has it on, they've shot the ball really well recently. David Crisp, 12 of 18 from three-pointers so far in Pac-12. It's really cool what they've built the program into, and it reminds me that fan bases do change, and you don't have a basketball school or a football school necessarily, because you do get to see programs get built up, and they've become a basketball program. There's a story in the UW Daily this week about the dog pack and the things they do, and that they've the one thing constant that goes back to after the movie The Sixth Man aired is that when they announce the other team's names for the starting lineup, they all chant "Who cares?" which I think is like one of those juvenile, disrespectful things that a crowd will do.
College students.
It's a college thing that was there. That was not there when I stepped foot on campus, and it's cool that that's been built.
You know what the Stanford fans do? They pull out a newspaper.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Have you seen that one? Or they, what else did they do? They blow whistles or something like that. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, that's it's cool. I like Husky basketball. It's fun watching them, and I love Hopkins. And I love that he runs a zone defense that allows Matisse Thybulle to get that many steals.
Thybulle's
and that kid
awesome.
Is, and we're going to, hopefully we're going to try to talk to him at some point, but we had him on last year. He's a great kid, and it's funny. I have no problem rooting for, except for tonight, of course, because Dejon Davis is going to come in here and school the Huskies.
He could.
Kid from Garfield High School. He had the most assists of any freshman last year, and he was fourth in the Pac-12 last year. He was on the all-freshman team.
If I was like Jim Moore, I would have a great deal of hostility toward Dejon Davis because he's originally going to come to Washington.
I know.
He was part of the whole contingent that was signed, sealed, and delivered to come here.
Well, was he was in cahoots with the Porters?
No. Well, cahoots is a very negative way to put it.
Yeah, well.
He was committed to the University of Washington.
Cahoots
along with
is the
others.
Way I put it. You know what I was going to tell you guys? You know what Cougar fans do when the opponents come out? You know how they greet them? I don't know, because we don't have any that go to the games.
They're really quiet.
Yeah. Can we talk about tonight's game over in Pullman? This is a big one.
Yeah.
It might be our only chance for a win.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it going to be played at
Robert Franks is coming back tonight. He's going to be limited with his hip injury, but we actually have a shot to win the game. I mean, it's possible because it's the two worst teams in the Pac-12.
That
so we'll
is
see.
One of four games in the Pac-12 tonight. Here's a reflection of, and Curtis Rogers brought this up. There are three nationally televised games in the conference tonight. They are all tipping off at the exact same time. They are all tipping off at 6 p.m. Pacific. Oregon at Arizona is on ESPN. Stanford at Washington is on ESPN2, and Oregon State at Arizona State is on FS1. So if you're a Pac-12 basketball fan, those are three pretty good games, and they're all tipping off at exactly the same time.
Can't they stagger them?
Go to a sports bar?
Or you can go to Jim's house.
Yeah. The Cougar Room.
How many our basement?
Equipped.
How many TVs in the Cougar Room?
Got three down there.
Three all the same size? Or
yeah, but usually
feature?
The big screen's got a basketball game on, and the other two have Fortnite or NBA 2K.
Are you going to co-opt those tonight and tell them, hey, we
no,
got to go to
basketball? No, because they have a game at Eastlake, so I'm going to be up there for that. But, you know, getting back to the Huskies, I think you're right, though, Danny. It's a great place to watch a game, too. It really is, because we went to we saw the Cougar Husky game there, and what Mike Hopkins is doing, and, you know, some of the other things. I mean, you mentioned Crisp and how he's come out of the shooting slump that he had last year. There's a story, I think it was Percy Allen this morning in the Times, talking about some injury issues that he had last year that contributed to that. But it's a likable team. I mean, the way I know you don't like the zone, but the way they play defense, Dom Green out of Hazen, love that kid. And you don't need to rely on Dickerson as much now like you did last year. And Dickerson's only averaging 8 points a game in conference, and yet you guys are 3-0, and you look to be 5-0. You're favored by 10.5 over Stanford tonight, and you're probably going to be a double-digit favorite over Cal on Saturday too.
Jalen Noel is a fun player to watch. Thybulle will play in the NBA. Because he's got the length and he's a defensive player. And he's someone, I think his three-point shot is coming around. But Jalen Noel, the beauty of his game, because he's got a really pretty mid-range jumper. He's not a great three-point, he's not a good three-point shooter. But his mid-range, and he looks smooth. He's a fun player to watch.
Is this the only chance you think of, I mean, the West Coast, we've got Gonzaga that has two losses, right? And they're on kind of a streak right now. They're going through their West Coast Conference now, so you think, okay, they're probably going to win the rest of theirs. But as far as the Pac-12, I mean, it looked like Arizona State there for a while was going to be good. And then all of a sudden they started losing. Stanford beat them by like 16 points or 14 points. So, you know, I just hope that the West Coast kind of comes back a little bit in basketball. And, you know, hopefully Gonzaga and Washington will lead the way.
C-Rod will tell you can't trust Arizona State because they're coached by a psychopath.
Why is Bobby Hurley a psychopath?
He's just so unhinged.
Yeah, that's great.
Not if you're an ASU fan.
This is coming from a guy that used to root for a team that had Stoops on your sideline.
Fair point. And Rich Rod.
Oh my God. I forget which Stoops it was, but he was angry all the time.
Yeah, but he never versed in psychos.
Mike Stoops never set out in each game looking to get ejected. That's what Bobby Hurley has done multiple times.
The other thing is, has your basketball coach stopped sweating?
No.
Sean Miller still will just soak through a shirt?
Yeah, no joke. The equipment guy for Arizona purposely ordered more sweat-wicking shirts for him so that he could have more breathability.
Is he still wearing suits?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then ditch the suit, dude.
Yeah, get the dry-fit polo.
Do anything.
It's Danny David Moore. We're going to sweep the dial, and that includes Mr. Peepers, Adam Gase. He joined Dan Levitard next.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
I don't have Twitter, Instagram. I don't read the internet. I don't watch TV. Like, I don't, all that stuff doesn't, it's irrelevant to me. To me, it's pollution of the brain. I really don't care. Like, that's how I operate. I'm here to do one thing, and that's to help this organization win. So all that other stuff is irrelevant to me.
Would you like your football coach to be that way? Hey, I'm in a bunker. What happens outside this building doesn't really matter to me, and I don't care if people are making fun of how my eyes are.
Would I?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know about the kids now, though. But was that his answer after he asked him about the googly eyes?
He asked him about what has it been like. It was a good question. What's it been like to see the memes of you making fun of your eyes with the taco bouncing around?
Did nobody ask why he did that?
Nobody asked him during the press conference, why does it look like you have hostage eyes?
No,
did he,
no.
Did he joke around at all?
I mean from Le Batard.
Yeah.
Dan Le Batard, that's on his radio show. Did he not ask him, why were your eyes so googly?
I don't know if he
said what happened at the press conference and then went on and said, and have you seen all of these things?
Yeah.
And so he really didn't address what happened to make his eyes go googly.
Yeah, that'd be the only question. I mean, he totally missed on that. The question would be, what in the world? Can you do that again? Do you do that all the time? Does it freak your wife out?
I agree. Because that's all anybody's been talking about. I mean, you don't even think about what he had to say at the press conference. I think he should have just joked about it and then, you know, made his eyes big again for Le Batard. Shouldn't
he? You think he could do it again?
Well, he was on the phone.
You got to ask him, like, a certain question.
Do you think he got hopped up before he went out there?
No.
Like, ate some nerds?
Oh, you mean on sugar?
Yeah,
Pixie
just got,
sticks,
like,
man.
All pumped up.
Just this one time this year, I just want to hear one time him say, that is the kind of play that just makes my eyes pop out of my head.
7 seconds on the shot clock. Hart steps back over Caruso. Got it. It was almost another man down. Garden time again. Takes it inside, draws a foul, gets a basket.
James Harden is a scoring machine, and it's probably embodies some of the difficulties. Players, the scoring is way up in the NBA, especially for stars. He shoots a ton of free throws. And
is he good at, what's his percentage at the line?
Oh, his percentage at the line is probably 88%, 85-88%.
I admire that.
He shoots the heck out of free throws. And it's all isolation. There's no passes setting up.
I watched part of that game last night. It was almost like I had league pass because I was bouncing around. I don't know how I had so many NBA games on. But he just stands out there, Dave, and he dribbles between his legs for a while, and then as the shot clock goes down, he goes, I better just cast this sucker.
Sounds like.
And so he had a game on Sunday where he was 1 of 17 from 3, but he still scored 36 points because he got to the line. I know people love James Harden. It's a different kind of game to watch, though, and it's entertaining. But
it sounds like great basketball. It's great team basketball.
Yeah.
You're dribbling around out there, and then you just take a shot while everybody clears out.
I love the NBA. This is becoming a little much even for me, like the isolation game that goes on. They're incredibly skilled. Watching what Harden does to get to the line is pretty impressive. But it is starting to get a little boring where you're just, okay, it started with Russell Westbrook a couple years ago. Like, okay, you averaged a triple-double. Your team's meh. they make the playoffs and then get bounced.
What'd you say that all those? So the game that he had 57 against Memphis and then 58 against the Nets, there were no assists.
None of his field goals were assisted on.
That's unbelievable.
Yes,
you have to try to do that,
or have an offense that's completely built on just giving you the ball and letting you create whatever shot you got.
Well, and also, I mean, they were both in losses. Now, look, I mean, scoring 58 points, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, I'm sure it's a spectacle to see that. And I like that he takes it to the hoop, too, every once in a while. But, and no, you're right. I mean, having to play defense on a guy like that, just one-on-one, that would be ridiculously hard. But it also makes you wonder if that's the winning combination for them. I mean, I know he's won a lot of games for him, but he's scoring 58 points in losses. Are they both over 10? I think one of them was overtime.
The 58-pointer was overtime.
Yeah. Overtime.
I'm sorry, he scored 58 and 38. But still, I mean, maybe that's not what the best formula is for their team.
Matt Hasselbeck told Kevin Clark of The Ringer that a team in contention this year called him up to talk about playing. He's 43 years old.
I would have loved to have seen that.
I don't know if I would have. I love Matt.
What team do you think it was? Some team that was hurting for quarterback play.
Who do I think it would have been? Would they have been actually wanting him to play?
Was he in Tennessee?
He was in Tennessee. See it?
But they're not contenders.
No.
During the season, right?
Blaine Gabbert. That they called him up during the season.
Yeah, that might have been Tennessee because Mariota had some injury issues there at the end.
Yeah, I could see that. What about the... It's hard for me to imagine another team. You'd want him with a young quarterback. You would want him to help a young quarterback because he's great. He's a great presence for those sort of things. I love Matt.
I do too.
That would have to be a tough decision. How long has he been out? 3 years?
I don't know. He's doing a good job, though.
He's great. Yeah.
You know, I just, after I retired, I didn't retire, sorry, after they retired, I used to wake up with dreams. I'd have these dreams all the time that it went on for like 3 years where a team was like going to the playoffs and somebody got hurt and they needed a linebacker. And, you know, I would just wake up with like the most empty feeling. And now look, I got to play 9 years in the league. It was great. And nobody feeling sorry for me. But, you know, when you leave, you just realize you can't go back. There's nothing you can do to simulate it. And so, you know, if he wanted to go back, I would say good for you, man.
Yeah.
You know, if you really still had the passion. You know, and I had that passion like maybe 6 years after I retired, like in 2000, 2001, and I was in really good shape. And that was the thing. I decided, you know, after that I need to stop being so, I need to get out of shape so I don't feel physically like I could still play.
Was that hard for you to do?
Yeah. Then, no, it was fun. And then it led to 30-10. No, but I honestly, like for the last 5 years, I kept lifting heavy and everything, and I was still, you know, pretty fast, and I would run and stuff, and I'm like, I feel like I could still play, even when I was like 38, 37, 36, you know, and so I decided, well, why don't I just stop working out so hard, and then I won't feel like I have a chance. Of course, I didn't have a chance, because once you're out after a year or two, you're probably, not unless you're a quarterback, how long has it been since he retired?
Was it? I think 3 years.
13, 14.
He was definitely there. Jake Locker won 2 years with Jake Locker. And then he was with the Colts. He was Andrew Luck's backup for sure at one point. So maybe that would be 2012.
Seems like it's been 3 years, though.
Maybe it was a little bit later on. Matt's a fantastic guy. It is Danny David Moore. The Seahawks have a new backup quarterback. We're going to answer that as well as some free agency questions. That's coming up next.